Who with it now? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, prideofdetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions of the NFL's Detroit finest in Honolulu blue. We're all in Honolulu blue too, except for me. I'm in the olive because I have a salute to troops jersey I wore on the Facebook Live the other night. True goddamn respecting troop hours up in here. Let's get around here, shall we? And then we're going to get right into talking about the third straight Lions win over Washington. Jeremy Reisman's here at Detroit Howdy. On Lion. At Detroit on Lion.
Yes, sir.
Howdy.
How we doing tonight?
Good. Jeremy's finally coming to us now from beautiful California again and not Florida.
Back on the West Coast, out of that hellhole. Sorry, Florida yeah, listeners.
You survived the apocalypse. You survived Hurricane Fuck Us All Up.
Matthew, I think it was. I don't even remember.
It's Hurricane Fuck Us All Up. These names mean shit.
Sure.
Why do we give them such like homey names? Why are we giving them these Anglo-Saxon names? I don't like it.
I don't think having a hurricane named Fuck You Up would necessarily instill a lot of confidence.
People would understand the gravity of the situation, though, and get out of Florida when it comes by.
All that would do would unnecessarily close some Waffle Houses, and no one wants that.
Maybe. Ryan Matthews is here. Back is the
motherfucking rock guy. What's up, guys?
At Ryan underscore POD, the Limp Bizkit liker, has logged on.
I'm here. You know, the only storm that I know of that's named Matthew was at Ford Field last night. How you doing? Yo,
how you doing?
And end of podcast.
How you doing? I like it.
Stafford for MVP. All right, we can end it now.
Can we just, before we get into breaking down this game, I know the Chargers games are probably just as close and weird, but the Lions have to be playing some of the most exciting football in the NFL right now, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to argue. And I'd argue that they've been doing this for a couple years now. I mean, when one quarter of your quarterback starts have resulted in a game-winning drive at the end of the game, that's some insane football right there. One quarter, not one quarter of his wins, one quarter of his starts, he gets a game-winning drive. That's insane.
Yeah, and like there's a lot of those games too where it's like just falls short of those game winning drives, which I mean, yeah, that sucks. But again, as I was arguing today with someone, just as a neutral, like, come on, that's incredibly exciting. The only team that probably comes close is the San Diego Chargers, who have now got like what, two wins in a row now, but they've had a bunch of these games too. These like less than one score games. And I don't know if you can keep winning them, Detroit, but you can keep playing them for sure, especially with this defense, especially with that quarterback. And you know what? More exciting than Seattle, Arizona, 6-6 tie. Sunday night football.
Don't get me started on that game because I thought that game was amazing.
You thought it was amazing for the ending.
No, I was enjoying the whole thing. I like defensive battles. I think that was more than just two offensive teams being crappy. And then, of course, the ending when you have two field goals under 30 yards missed in overtime. Unbelievable. That's great. That's great TV right there.
You're just excited for the Pete Carroll gif that you got out of it.
Any Pete Carroll gif of him emoting in any sort of way is the best gif of the week.
What about if it's Pete Carroll emoting about how 9/11 was an inside job and the controlled demolitions in Tower 7? Is that good?
If you throw a monocle on him while he's doing that and has a little staff in his hand, still good.
Okay. Just want to make sure that you're about this life because Pete Carroll is. Ryan, what'd you think of Lions football so far?
Oh, man. The last three games decided by a total of 7 points. And when your team ends up on top of all three of those contests, you got to feel good on Victory Monday. And, you know, I read, you know, we'll get into Bill Barnwell's piece about Stafford a little bit, but Cousins scores that touchdown, and all of a sudden they go up to a 99.5% win expectancy, and that 0.5% is so much more because Matthew Stafford's on our side.
Yeah.
They had a half a percent chance of winning. They had to move the ball 75 yards, and they did it in 43 seconds and won.
After a game, I like going on other teams' blogs, and my guilty pleasure is starting to go through their like fourth quarter threads or post game threads. And I just kind of scrolled through the fourth quarter thread on Hogs Haven, and it was a treat. I'll just say that, like, they had sure they were in the bag too, but then they met Stafford.
The Lions had it in control too, though. I mean, they had a win expectancy of 94% when they were up by 10 with 13 minutes left. And you know, we'll talk about how bad the defense is, but they had the game in hand. But if you leave the Lions the ball with time left on the clock, you're making a mistake.
Yeah, I saw some people saying, no, we should have tried to, like, instead of Kirk Cousins going in for the touchdown, like, kneel it down at the one and then run out the clock from there. But football doesn't work that way. But I could understand the sentiment, especially when you realize that Stafford's going to make it look very easy on the next drive. And to be clear, like, not every game going forward is going to look like this. There's going to be some of these close game scenarios where it's just going to be the ghost given up. And as you said, too, like, yeah, it was a pretty good Lions lead, and then it just evaporated.
You guys are confusing me a little bit, because I was on Twitter on Sunday. I only follow one person. I follow Skip Bayless, and he told me that the Redskins won. So what are you talking about with this 0.5% chance?
I like that, Kirk Cousins.
I am convinced now, 24 hours later, actually more than 36 or so hours later, that tweet he made was specifically to troll the Washington fan base, that he made that to jinx Washington, because he's a Cowboys fan. He almost trolled us today too, because he was like, he sent out something about Matt Stafford for MVP, but then all of a sudden you get to a show and it's talking about Dak Prescott.
Yeah, he's just drooling over the Cowboys.
Yeah, yeah.
The Cowboys are on bye, and he's like, let's talk about Matthew Stafford for MVP. Pull the rug out. Dak Prescott!
Just pulling off a mask. You thought I was talking about the Lions.
None of us bit for it, though. None of us took the bite.
Nope, nope.
No.
Nope, we're only talking about it here because our brains are kind of broke. So
this is the Wally World segment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No. This is just going to be Wally World. We've talked enough about Skip Bayless today.
Okay. Well, you're depriving me of precious content, but we will take it there. But let's talk about the defense a little bit, because, yeah, as I was getting into there, oh, man, the Lions up. What were they up? 17 to 3 at one point?
13 to 3.
And it's like, okay, two scores, and yeah, I mean, and to be honest, too, like, let's talk about how many points Washington left on the field because of Matt Jones fumbles, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot going on with this game with the defense. I want to start with the positives, just because it's the first time we've ever been able to say anything positive about the defense that wasn't a game-ending interception. I thought the defensive line looked a lot better. I thought Kerry Hyder continues to look really good, and he's actually, I thought we'd see Kerry Hyder snaps decrease as Ansa gets healthier. He saw a big increase in snaps this game. He saw 71% of the snaps, while Ansa's still getting around 50% of the snaps. So Hyder's playing at a high level, and the Lions are noticing and giving him the playing time. But outside of him, I thought Kyrie Thornton had a really good game. He was, you know, in the backfield at least four or five times in that game. And he's kind of the reason for that second, what they're calling the nut fumble from Kirk Cousins. He was in the backfield kind of disrupting that play anyways. So, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been a fumble if they had the handoff right, but it would have been a tackle for loss on a third down. And then I thought Ansa looked better. I think And just overall, I thought Kirk Cousins was kind of on the run quite a bit this game. They're still having some problems blitzing, but you see them trying just about everything. We saw Rafael Bush get his first career career sack of his career. And then last week it was Darius Slay's first sack of the year. So they're trying, they're getting a little push, but there's also a lot of bad stuff going on still.
Well, let's talk about one of the bad things that might come back here. And I know we don't have an update. People were asking me all Facebook Live about, do we have an update on Darius Slay? Do we have an update on Darius Slay? It's Monday. Do we have an update on Darius Slay? What is the certified Caldwell answer to that, Ryan Matthews?
Yeah, check the report.
Yep. You're not going to know until near the end of the week. I'm sorry. We just... Maybe we can talk about this a little bit. Like, hamstring issues are kind of tricky for corners, are they not?
Just tricky for anybody in general. I mean, look at what happened to LeSean McCoy. He sustains a hamstring injury in practice, you know, this past week going into the game. The Bills say they're going to be cautious with it. They ended up putting him on a snap count, and he re-injures it. And now he's going to miss a significant amount of time rather than just maybe, you know, a week or two. So it's something where if he misses the Houston game, it's a huge bummer. The defense can't really stomach a loss like that. But you would rather have him miss one game rather than miss a month.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Especially going up. I don't know. Man, I'm just looking at Houston a little bit and kind of sweating here, but we'll have to see. We're kind of recording this during Monday Night Football, so we're kind of missing some primo scouting, but we'll check the tape.
If it comes down to it, would you rather take the risk and have him go, you know, maybe 70-80% against Houston, or hold him out in the hopes that he's ready for the Vikings the next week?
I mean, I guess the big question is that, and this is always the hard part with all these injuries, how much is this going to change without Darius Slay? The answer is screaming right in your face, especially after we saw Johnson Badamasi, like, completely look lost out there. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'd rather have healthy after the bye.
I think, you know, personally, if it's something where he'd even have to like push it to be back by the Vikings, just give him through the bye week to get right. You know?
Yeah. That's probably the right move. I mean, obviously we still don't know much about the injury, so it's hard to make that judgment call on a Monday.
Right. For sure. But it's tough too, because you look at the Lions schedule. I don't want to get too far ahead, but just next week looking at Houston, it seems like one of the most winnable games that they have that is on the road. So it's tough to kind of say, you know, we aren't going to benefit from having our best defensive player in that situation. It puts the Lions in a tough, spot. I think they're going to do everything they can to have him ready, and I hope he's ready. But I just don't really understand the media, how all of a sudden now you look at every headline and it's Lions possibly could be without Slayer. That they're really pushing this, like he's basically out. They're preparing for him to not be there. Like, I'm getting that sentiment.
But this is kind of what happens when you don't really have an injury report to really go on. People are just going to sell this doom for whatever reason. But I want to talk about this whole like Houston thing too. Just moving forward, this isn't a preview podcast, but I mean, the Lions have had some skin of the teeth games, but they also lost some skin of the teeth games. So I don't know. How likely do you think this streak is going to keep going? Because I'm not betting too hard on it.
No, I'm not either. The first thing I think to point out is just how difficult the schedule gets ahead of, you know, very quickly. Like Ryan was saying, Houston is looking like one of the easier games left on the schedule. They're what, 4-2 right now before Monday Night Football?
Yep, 4-2 going into Denver. So we'll have to see what it is.
Granted that the Lions have come off three straight wins against teams that did have winning records. When they faced him, they'll have to do it again. But I think the bigger point, and you've made this point in the past, Chris, is that these last second wins, these, you know, winning by one possession things, those things sort of tend to even out over a season. So your record in close games for almost every franchise tends to be right around 500.
And everyone's saying like, oh, they could be 5-1 right now. Well, I mean, the inverse is kind of true too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Like that, that's kind of the thing. Like, and again, when we talk about the Lions playing exciting football, you have to be ready on the occasion that they might lose those two. Because right. Speaking neutral exciting means they're all close. Exciting from like a slappy perspective might be like a 45 win, like a 30 point win margin or whatever.
Right.
But that's not really exciting to a neutral. What's exciting to the neutral is the heart palpitations you feel as a Lions fan when Stafford's trying to get that final drive together.
And I'm a believer in Stafford magic at the end of the game more than, you know, anyone really is. But you also have to realize how difficult those situations really are, because when you're forced into a situation where you have to score a touchdown with under 60 seconds left, the defense knows what you're doing. And you see great quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers does not have a very good record playing from behind.
Just imagine what that would have been like if Josh Norman hadn't gotten concussed. Like, just imagine how the drive could have been a lot different.
And I mean, you see these drives end more often than not in interception, because quarterbacks are forced to throw some difficult passes into tight coverage.
Tight windows.
Yeah.
Really tight windows.
That throw to Andre Roberts, if it's an inch higher, probably gets picked. That touchdown pass was inches away from being tipped. Matthew Stafford said something really smart, I think, after the game. And he's like, when you get down, like driving all the way down to the red zone, that can be kind of easy because the defense is playing prevent. But once you get close, no one is open. He said that specifically. No one is open. You just have to have a quarterback and a receiver make a play. Bolden made a good catch and a good run after the catch. And Stafford fit it into like an inch window. And that's not something you can rely on every game. So going way back to your question, I still see this as a 7-9, 8-8 team, but I'm enjoying the ride right now.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. We're all enjoying the ride. Let's see. Closing notes here from the game before we get on to our next topic. Washington special teams coordinator Ben Kodwicka pissing on the sidelines into a cup. Our old pal Jeff Schwartz pointed out that where was that tweet? He was pointing out about how hard it is. Oh, here we go. Peeing on the sidelines is an art. It's surprising how often stadiums don't have bathrooms near the benches. It's mostly the older stadiums. So.
Just use a towel, guys. Set yourself up with a little
piss.
Just have a buddy hold up a towel so that you're not throwing on a peep show for the guys in the second row.
Ryan's holding his head now.
Just advocating for pissing on the sidelines as long as you do a good job of concealing it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, why not? I'm surprised that Ford Field built in what, 2002? Opened in 2002? It doesn't have bathrooms nearby that you can like you really can't hold it. Just hold it, hey, dude.
Hydration is important. Sometimes you got to overhydrate during
for
football
a coordinator
game.
Yeah, a coordinator.
Hey man,
I can imagine if it's like a special player
teams,
or something.
If you're a special teams coordinator and you're facing the Lions, you better be drinking a lot. Get your work cut out for yourself.
Speaking of coordinators, speaking of coordinators and defense, that topic we just got off of, happy trails again, once again to Barry.
Joe Barry?
Yeah, Joe Barry. He's their defensive coordinator.
Ah,
that's right.
That is true.
So there's a little name from the past for y'all out there. In fact, they were even saying, I remember going through the Hogs Havens guys, like people were even saying, like, it's like, oh, this guy used to be a Lions defensive coordinator. What do you expect? Da, 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 da. And yeah,
this is kind of turning out to be like a farewell tour for the Lions for all their head coaches, their old head coaches. Like, you know, we've been beaten by Jim Schwartz. We've been beaten by our entire coaching staff that appears to be on the Cowboys. Now we're kind of taking it to them now. Maybe we can kind of get the last punch in with the Cowboys late in the season.
It's like banishing the ghosts of Christmas past.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Matt Stafford, especially those three letters, those three dreaded letters, MVP. But more importantly, we're going to talk about how Stafford got here, because Y'all, none of us predicted this, and we'll talk about it next. All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. Before we get any further, though, and I should have done this in the first segment, y'all know we're on iTunes. Y'all know we're on Stitcher. But please, help us out there. We're on iTunes. We need probably all the help we can get to kind of rise up in the rankings. So if you got a minute and you really enjoy our content, if you think this is, to quote Darren Revelle, if you think this is tremendous content, please, like, give us a rating, leave a review. We'll shout out any review we get.
Yeah, I think we get to do a shout out this week, actually.
Yeah, you want to do that right now?
Yeah. Our latest review, 5 stars, comes from I Like Good Music 13. All right, do you have your bleeper ready? We need a bleeper for this segment.
We don't bleep anything. We go hard.
Fucked up moms and fucked up dads. It's a fucked up cop with a fucked up badge. All listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars with a Z. Biscuit out.
Wonderful.
If you were unsure, that was an allusion to the titular track from Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water entitled Hot Dog, which famously uses the F word 46 times.
Probably our best review yet. Thank you. I like Good Music 13.
The good music thing. But anyway, let's talk about Matt Stafford, not about Chocolate Starfish. He's good. We know that much. But I want to say right now, and I don't want like any revisionist stuff. I will go back and look around. Besides Jeremy, who keeps talking about him and his goddamn top 10 quarterbacks from Listcast, Ryan, did you see any that do you think in any world that this is how Matt Stafford would turn out in this year?
No.
Who did?
That's the short answer and the long answer. It's just no.
This is one instance in which the offseason homers were right, because they were telling us all offseason that look at the way Matthew Stafford finished last year. Look at the way Matthew Stafford finished last year. He's going to do it again. Lines are going to be amazing. And I, you know, even though I had Stafford as a top 10 quarterback going into the season, I also will admit that I didn't see this coming, because last year was only against horrible defenses.
We talked all about the strength schedule. Like, the second half of the season last year was against some really bad teams.
That was the toughest thing to try to understand where this team would go, right? Like, it was all about the strength of schedule in the second half, and we definitely didn't think it was sustainable, but we did like what we saw for sure, right, Jeremy?
Absolutely. And I think through 7 weeks we can say that this offense is capable of putting on that sort of performance against good defenses. I don't think they've played a great defense yet, but I'd say Tennessee's a good defense. Probably not the greatest example because it wasn't Stafford's best.
What about the Rams defense, though?
Rams defense is good. I don't know if I would say great.
Philadelphia's...
Even Washington, too. Sure. I mean,
they went up against Josh Norman for about two-thirds of a game.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I still don't think, like, top-tier defenses. We'll see when we hit Minnesota. Luckily, we don't really play Seattle or Arizona this year, but I still think there's a tier of defense we haven't seen this team play against, but Stafford's met every challenge he's had so far.
Well, who do we even, like, credit as far as beginning the evolution? Like, how do you even begin to explain this? Because for all these years, we've talked about Matt Stafford, the national media has talked about Matt Stafford and kind of the second tier of quarterback at the most. Some guys, like, I think it was Bomani Jones, was like, you know, he was even, like, baffled at the idea of the contract that Matt Stafford got. And God bless his soul, wherever he may be, too. Drew Sharp, his last column was that the NFL was awarding mediocrity in quarterbacks and was pointing to Carson Palmer and Matt Stafford. Like, there was no conception of Matt Stafford in this elite company, in that dreaded five-letter word, elite. He wasn't considered up there. To think of it would have just said, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. You don't know anything. You are a Detroit homer. And yet, I've been resistant to it and I can't do it anymore. I can't. Like, you cannot tell me that you thought Matt Stafford would get this far without Calvin Johnson, with an offensive line that's still not that great, with no run game to really speak of, even before the injuries. And just now you've lost like Abdullah, Riddick, and Ebron, and he's still doing this. Like, there's really not a lot of explanations you can come up with other than this is Stafford. But where did Stafford really change? How did he really change?
Well, I mean, we can lead into the Bill Bardenwell article if we want, but you can't deny that something changed when Caldwell came in, because their philosophy with Stafford changed. He suddenly was not the down the field, take a chance, you know, risky throws downfield into double coverage. That Stafford is gone. That Stafford has been gone since Caldwell has been around. But there was a second transformation, and that was when we got rid of Joe Lombardi. And then we saw
Joe Lombardi was trying to make him kind of go downfield still, too.
Although I think, well, we're
going to talk about the Barnwell piece in a bit, but I think what Barnwell pointed out is like there was that trend of Stafford kind of like throwing shorter and shorter passes, and Jim Bob Cooter put it on steroids. But I don't know if I buy into the idea that it's all Jim Bob Cooter or even Jim Caldwell at this point. Like, how much do you want to assign this just to Jim Bob Cooter's system?
I think it almost has to go. I mean, if we're not, I mean, we should obviously give Stafford credit, but the non-Stafford side, I think it goes 50-50 Caldwell-Cooter, because like I said, like Caldwell immediately turned him into a risk-averse quarterback. His interception percentage went way down that year, the first year that he was here, even with Lombardi around, it was low. But he took a whole nother step once Jim Bob Cooter took over, and you know, I don't need to throw out the stats anymore because everyone's seen them. It's been insane.
It has been insane. And, you know, just knowing this iteration that we now have in watching Matthew Stafford this season, we have a quarterback who is clearly playing at an elite level, and he has been doing so for a season's worth of games. If you go all the way back to when, you know, Cooter took over for Lombardi last season. And you look at his numbers, and it's pretty perplexing considering we always bring up this comparison. But since he has had Jim Bob Cooter in his ear, Matthew Stafford's numbers have been extremely similar, and we've pointed this out before, to Andrew Luck. Now, if you look back at the 2014 Indianapolis team that Luck was on, it was another case and scenario of a really bad defense being dragged by Andrew Luck's great quarterback play. Do we think that that's something that Matthew Stafford can do? Because if before, you know, if we want to get into the idea of Matthew Stafford being an MVP candidate, do you think that the Lions have to be a playoff team?
I mean, they might be dragged there kicking and screaming. Maybe this year, probably next year. Like, if Stafford stays on this trajectory, there's a very good chance Stafford might regress in the second half. It's possible. It's very possible, especially as the strength of schedule kind of increases here in the second half of the year. But if he doesn't, and then Jim, and then Bob Quinn spends the offseason rebuilding the defense and drafting defense, homie, you just got to look at next year. And if you're healthy, it's like 2017 might be something. I'm not going to say what, but it might be something. But yeah, I think Caldwell himself said that, like, look, quarterbacks tend to enter their, you know, tend to really put it all together too. In his experience, like from Caldwell's experience, quarterbacks all put it together in their like fifth to eighth year in the league. And this is now Stafford's what?
Eighth season.
Yeah. And he's only 28, by the way. We have to keep pointing this out to people. He's only 28.
I like reminding myself of that daily. It just makes me smile.
He's got, at least barring catastrophic injury, at least 7 more years in this league.
Why would you even say that?
I have to.
But let's go to Ryan's question, because I think the MVP is something we have to talk about now. I resist it. It started bubbling up last week. I didn't really want to address it too much. It became too much.
I dove right in on the Facebook.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, we all know week 7 is way too early to start talking about who's going to win the MVP, but let's have fun. Let's have a leaderboard right now, and Stafford undoubtedly deserves to be on it. But to answer Ryan's question, if the Lions don't make the playoffs and Stafford still puts up these sort of stats, is he under consideration? And I think the answer is absolutely not. He won't get a single vote if the Lions don't make the playoffs.
I mean, especially since I think the other candidates include, like, what, Tom Brady doing all this on a 12-game schedule. And let's see, the Falcons are the top of the AFC South, of the NFC South. And Matt Ryan, like, all every advanced stat loves Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and even the normal stats, he's a half a step above Stafford right now. And like you're saying, Tom Brady is way above everyone else in his own. He may have only played 3 games, but with 12 games under his belt, and the Patriots are 14-2 or whatever they are, he's gonna win. If I were to put money on anyone right now, it'd be Tom Brady, and everyone else is a distant second right now.
But does the 3-1 start by the Patriots, does that at all hurt Tom Brady's case for MVP? Because yes,
it'll be a talking point.
It'll be
sure.
a talking point. I think it's a fair talking point, because if Matt Ryan, it would be insane if he stayed on the pace that he's on right now. He has over 2,300 yards of passing. He has 16 touchdowns. I mean, his numbers are just off the charts. I think that Matt Ryan is probably your leader. But if he stays on that pace and they win the NFC South and they go 11-5. It's kind of hard not to give Matt Ryan the regular season MVP for playing in all 16 games, presumably that he plays in all of them. And Tom Brady's team started off 3-1 and was seemingly not fine without him. But do you think that the Patriots are a playoff team with Garoppolo at quarterback? I think they are.
Maybe.
Tom Brady is a system quarterback.
Most overrated system quarterback there ever was.
See, yeah. Let me bring this around back to Matthew Stafford, because because there is already a backlash to the Stafford love, because some national guys don't really like Stafford, and I understand that, and he's new to this kind of elite level of play.
It's going to take at least another season before it's widespread knowledge, I think.
But one argument I've seen pop up, and it makes me laugh, is that Stafford is utilizing an quote unquote easy offense now, that he isn't gunning it downfield. That's what Tom Brady does.
Football's changing, man. Yeah. And yeah, Tom Brady does it. And football's changing too, just because you're not running, the prototypical West Coast offense of, actually, this kind of is West Coast offense. You're basically replacing your run game with more passing and short yardage passing. But yeah, just because you're not throwing it downfield, like who is though? Who is, while still being efficient?
Matt Ryan. Right?
But he's got Julio. This is my argument, though. He's got Julio Jones.
No.
Oh, boy. Now we're
in dangerous
opening
territory.
A can of worms here if we're going to say a wide receiver is making a quarterback, because where have we heard that argument before?
Well, what does Matt Stafford not have this year?
Well, yeah, now you can make that argument, but I'm just
now
saying.
Now I can. Let's talk about this Barnwell piece, because I like it a lot.
It's very good. Shout out to Barnwell, because I enjoy everything he writes, and I'm sad that Grantland got shut down, but he at least stuck around with ESPN. Shout out Barnwell.
What do you probably take to the numbers a little easier than I do, Jeremy. What do you think is the piece that people should be picking up most from Barnwell's article about Stafford?
The thing he does is what everyone is doing, and comparing Stafford under Lombardi to Jim Bob Cooter, but he's using a lot of really interesting and a lot of visual statistics. So he shows the pass distribution from Stafford under both offenses, and it's generally the same, kind of that short offense they were talking about, a little more risk averse. But you look at like Stafford's heat map, if you will. So his passer rating from every down and every distance, every corner of the field, basically. And he had a below average passer rating in just about every aspect of the field under under Lombardi, and that whole map went from blue to red under Cooter. And, you know, it, like us, he kind of struggled. Yeah. So, like us, he kind of struggles to necessarily find a reason why he's better, because he is kind of making those same passes. But in general, it's just, it's accuracy. So, and he rightfully points out that Stafford is hurt by one of the worst drop percentages in the league, something we haven't mentioned yet today, that the Lions receivers are dropping everything, and he's still putting up ridiculous accuracy numbers. So, if there's one thing to point to that he's improved from, I don't know why I keep forgetting Lombardi's name. I guess I'm trying to get rid of it from my brain. But if there's one thing he's improved from Lombardi to Cooter, it's his accuracy, and by quite a bit.
I just want to also point out too, and you know, I think when it comes to the accuracy thing, though, I think a lot of that is just kind of general growth as a quarterback. We talk about all the dumb things. I think Barnwell even said this, is like, yeah, he would make these great throws, but he would always make kind of even it out with a back breaking interception or just a dumb decision. And so far this year, he's really kind of held that down. Like, I think he's just kind of mentally gotten a lot of those kinks out of the way. Like, again, like I think we almost saw a specter of it against Washington on Sunday, where, what is it? He's running to try to extend the play, and I think it was Kerrigan who came up behind him and like swatted at his arm. He was being a little careless with the ball, but he immediately like spun around and like grabbed it before it went completely out, like completely as a fumble.
That was some ball luck. Lions had a lot of ball luck last week.
Yeah, that was a little ball luck, but still too, he had the awareness to know that it's like, oh crap, this guy's knocking out of my arm quick. I need to turn around. I can't count how many times I've seen Stafford like go back to pass and someone grabs his arm and knocks the pass out and just keeps with going through his throwing motion. Like he had a better reaction time, I thought. But I think my big thing from the Barnwell piece is he gets into talking about Calvin Johnson, the can of worms you didn't want to open, Jeremy. But I just want to read this one paragraph. Now, though, Johnson is gone. Stafford is doing this with Tate, Marvin Jones, the 36-year-old Anquan Boldin. I'm sorry, years don't matter for Anquan Boldin. He's a cyborg. And Theo Riddick. And by the way, Barnwell got that wrong. He doesn't have Theo Riddick right now. He'll get Eric Ebron back eventually, and the tight end the Lions famously chose over Odell Beckham Jr. and Aaron Donald may be a useful weapon, but nobody in this group is a Hall of Famer. Riddick was a 6th-round pick. Tate, Jones, and Bolden all arrived in town and been more productive and impactful than they were in previous stops. The Lions haven't skipped a beat despite losing Johnson to retirement and seeing both Ebron and their top two running backs, Riddick and Amir Abdullah, go down with injuries. Stafford is making the guys around him better. Do you agree with that, yes or no?
100%, yeah. You have to. I think this kind of goes back to, you know, Jeremy pointing out the uncharacteristically high drop percentage that Barnwell points out in the article. You know, despite throwing the ball in these quick passing, you know, short situations where it's, you know, snap the ball, quick read, get the ball out, you know, he mentions that they're dropping at a 5.6% drop rate, and that's incredibly high. The only quarterback who has a higher drop rate from his receivers is Blaine Gabbert over that time. The league average is 3.9. So, you know, just imagine how much better he'd be making these players around him if they would just catch the damn ball that was thrown right into their hands. And I think he's done everything to make, I mean, Marvin Jones, who had Marvin Jones being, I mean, would you say Marvin Jones is a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL right now?
I mean, he started off pretty hot, but I think right now we can say, like, we've seen Marvin Jones have a couple of really, and it started to turn into that. Everyone was talking about Marvin Jones. He might beat out Calvin Johnson's record. And we talked about him in that way, but after a couple of quiet games, it's pretty well clear that's like, okay, so if they start covering up Marvin Jones, he'll just go to Golden Tate.
And you know what, that's the point I want to make. That's the thing where I can totally get on board with what Barnwell is saying, is that Stafford is making the players around him better. the number one characteristic of any quarterback that you want to deem quote unquote elite, at any point in time, he's going to make anybody on that offense do what they need to do in order to either score points, move the chains, get yardage. It doesn't matter. When Josh Norman was doing a pretty good job of bottling up Marvin Jones in the first half, what did he do? He went to Golden Tate. He went to Clay Harbor. He got two receptions out of Clay Harbor. I think that he's doing such a good job of just being able to pick and choose. Okay, you know what? Marvin Jones is the hot guy. He rides him for a couple weeks. Golden Tate, you know, I can pull him out of the doldrums. Everybody wants to trade his ass. These past 2 weeks, Golden Tate's been the best receiver on the team. Stafford's done everything in his power to make this team better. And without Matthew Stafford, you want to talk about the Lions could be 5-1. Without Matthew Stafford, the Lions are probably 0-6. And I can say that with great confidence.
What quarterback are you putting in his place for that, Owen?
Put a league.
Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
What about, I would even go a little higher than that. I'd even say if you had Andrew Luck in charge of this team.
No.
I'm trying to say if you put in a league average replacement, think of it as kind of like a war situation, whereas you just put an average level replacement player at that position, and I would consider, yeah, sure, somebody like, okay, Brock Osweiler or Ryan Fitzpatrick or
Joe Flacco.
He's elite.
Derek Carr.
I think Derek Carr is kind of like in the. He's trending upward.
He's good. He's 13 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's pretty good right now.
This is really hard to do with like different. What about Kirk Cousins?
I like that one.
You like that
I
one?
Like that.
What about
I like
Ryan
that.
Tannehill? Ryan Tannehill might be the best example. Of Ryan Tannehill, average level washed. Quarterback. Do you think that the Lions would have won a football game with Ryan Tannehill under center?
Hell no.
Maybe they steal one game. Maybe.
He would have beaten the Bears.
No. Don't do that.
The Lions, okay, how about this? Would the Lions be 4-3 with an average level quarterback replacement?
No, of course not.
Has Matthew Stafford made the weapons around him more weaponized?
Yeah, I think I said that last week. There's no question. And I also think it's worth pointing out because we've been throwing a lot of hate on the wide receivers because of all the drops. But let's give them some credit in these, especially in these past 2 weeks without Theoretic, without Eric Ebron. This team's had to rely completely on its wide receivers. And every single one of them have made huge plays. And Marvin Jones, as much as he's disappeared in the past 2 weeks, he's still 5th in the league in receiving yards. He has 7 less yards than Odell Beckham and 1 more touchdown. Think about that for a second.
It's impressive.
Anquan Boldin picks up 3-4 huge catches of a game. He's a first down machine, touchdown machine too. I think he's at least got 3 or 4 this year. And then, like you were saying, Golden Tate, Sumley, resurgence. And of course, Matthew Stafford deserves a lot of this credit, but these receivers are picking up some huge catches and you know, in huge moments too.
All right, we're going to leave it there and we should probably get moving on. But yeah, Matt Stafford, pretty goddamn awesome right now. Don't know about MVP, but
he's just the best quarterback in the NFL. That's it.
Certainly the best. I think at this point, probably the best. I mean, well, we've known for a while best since Bobby Lane, but we'll see where he goes from there for the Lions. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, I don't know if we got a rage corner, but we're going to try to get something out of that and a few other kind of miscellaneous notes. Then after that, we'll get right into the mailbag. So stick around.
Can you take a break?
Yelling!
Can you take a break?
I'm yelling at you!
Can you take a break?
Yelling!
Can I get get my dick sucked?
Can you hear me yelling?
Can I get my dick sucked?
Yelling, yelling.
Are you ready to suck now? Have you got it all out? You're mad, ain't you?
Stupid.
Red face.
Listen.
Now you're calling me stupid?
Listen. Yes, I am.
This is kangaroo court.
You know what? You have a constitutional right to be a dumbass.
All right, that's the music for Rage Corner. I'm not sure how much rage we have this week, to be honest, but let's kind of take a look around. God damn it. I just realized what I did. Let's take a look around and see what we have. Ryan, I think I have a note here from you. You are really upset about something.
Chris, thank you. I am a little bit upset about something. Actually, I'm a lot of bit upset about something. The head coach for the Detroit Lions apparently wears two watches at once. All the time. He wears one watch on one wrist and one watch on another wrist. Now your first question may be, why does the man wear two watches? To which I would respond, I have no idea other than the lame-ass idea that it is to tell time in the time zone that he's in and to be able to know what time it is from his hometown. Okay, my man, if you cannot add or subtract of like 2 or 3 hours, it's a problem. If you can't do simple math like that, then that's a problem. Now, number two, if you want to say, well, I've noticed in pictures that one of them is a dressy type watch and the other one is more sporty. Dude, you have to make a decision. You cannot be dressy and sporty all at one time. It just doesn't work that way. You can't dress like that. If you dress like that, you look like a clown. And you don't want to be a clown. Not in these times. Not in the social climate. You do not want to be a clown. You don't want to be caught wearing two watches. One that's sporty and one that's supposed to be dressy. You have to make decisions, Jim. You cannot live in both worlds. You have to make a choice. Decisions are made by adults. You are an adult and you have to make a goddamn decision. Wear one watch or wear the other watch. You can't wear both at the same time. You end up either looking like a comic book supervillain or you look like a guy who's trying to hawk watches on the corner of Lafayette and Mac. This is a problem, Jim. You can't do this, Jim. Pick one or the other.
Jeremy, next time we interview a Detroit Lion, do we need to ask him about the two watches?
Yeah, especially if it's a fashion conscious guy, which the Lions have a lot of.
We should have asked Ebron, but we didn't notice this until like right today. And like, I think we got a, who was it? It was someone who, it was Cameron, Cam Jam O, who informed Sideline Report about the fact that apparently he has two watches. And like, yeah, as I don't know why. I've been racking my head all day trying to find a logical answer
we really, to why. But. We really should have had like a Letterman top 10 list of clock management jokes we could have made this.
I was going to say, like, Ryan there was ranting about decisions, and I'm like, are you going to punt or are you going to go for it on fourth down?
He's just going to sit there and wait for the booth to make a decision for him and then decide to call a timeout and punt anyways.
Low. I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool at first, but then, like, as Ryan's pointing out, that is a pretty trash second watch there.
I don't care if one of them, it says that it's from Shinola, which is a Detroit company. That's great. That's fine. Guess what? Wear it when it's appropriate. Wear it when you have a suit on. Wear it when you're not wearing... Wear it when you're not wearing the polo you wear to work. When you're at work, you're coaching a sport. Wear a sporty watch. Wear something that goes with it. Don't wear a watch that you would wear with dress clothes, Jim.
Why not have, if you're going to wear two watches, why not put them on the same wrist? Why,
you know,
one
why?
On the left?
Let me tell
you
why.
These aren't like,
let me tell you why.
Like,
because Jim Caldwell did it one morning. He did it. He put them both on the same wrist and he goes, you know what? I look like an asshole. I'm going to put one on one wrist, one on the other one. And I'm going to look just fine. I'm going to look like a normal human being. Newsflash, Jim, nobody does that shit. Cut it out.
What if he went all Jack Del Rio though on the sidelines? Could he wear that
with a
then?
Suit? With a suit?
Yeah,
and two watches?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You have to make the decision. You have to wear the Shinola. You can't wear the sport watch with it. It's just unacceptable. I'm getting more upset about it. I wasn't really that fired up about it, but now I'm super upset. I'm super mad.
What if he's got more watches? What if he's got like watches on his ankles? And one of them is like an Apple Watch.
Yeah, it looked like he's on like house arrest.
next time he reaches for a challenge flag around his his sock, we gotta check and see if he's got a watch.
I can imagine Jim Caldwell. Like I said, he's on the corner of like Woodward and Mac, and people are trying to file in to get downtown, and he's just in a trench coat, and he just opens up his trench. You want to buy a watch?
He is. I think that's exactly what it is at this point. He is hawking like fake citizen watches. He has to be. There's really no other explanation in my mind that makes
sense. You've got to prepare for life after the NFL. It doesn't last a long time.
That's the thing. I could not hope for anything more than a Lions Super Bowl for one reason. Jim Caldwell gets a Citizens Echo Watch commercial spot, and he's sitting there with like a Super Bowl ring on one hand, and he just has like two watches on each wrist, and he's just kind of sitting there with like his oh man.
What if it's like one of those Rolex commercials? What if it's like one of those Rolex commercials for like Wimbledon, where it's like a guy walking through like white hallways with like old timey pictures, and it's just Jim Caldwell walking dour through the halls of like the decades of Detroit Lions.
He just
Lions
looks like
history.
The male Wonder Woman. Like he's got the bracelets on. Like that's the only
the male Wonder Woman.
Oh, Wonder God, coach. Please no one Photoshop that and send it up to us. Do not do that.
Oh, God. Especially not with Gal Gadot.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Make sure you don't do at @Ryan_POD with it, because I won't make it my Twitter profile image. I definitely won't.
I really don't have a rage. I was going to rage about something. I can't remember what it is now, but... I can't do it because all the hate drained out of my heart today when I heard that Jack Chick had died. And I know it's not bad to talk about someone after they die, but good fucking riddance. Do you guys not remember who Jack Chick is?
I have no idea who that is.
He is probably one of the most vile human beings to have walked the planet. He made all those like chick tracks. You guys know about this guy. You have probably seen one of his chick tracks, which are like handed out at Sunday at like really hardcore Protestant churches. That's like talking about Satanism and Dungeons. He did the Satanism and Dungeons and Dragons.
Jeremy's Jewish.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he ever did one against Jews, but I will say this, like, I'm serious. This guy used to make like comics that were like just pointing out just how vile Catholics and Mormons are. And if someone is growing up Catholic, fuck you. I hope you burn in hell forever. Like this guy. No, I'm serious. This guy made the world like a lot worse. And his death at 92 could have probably come a lot sooner. Like he put out so much, his tracks put out like so much stuff that just harmed LGBT youth. They were basically instruction manuals on how to torture them and shit. And just like, yeah, no, you can find some of his stuff floating around on Twitter today, but you know what? World's happier with his passing. But I actually, this wasn't what the point of my Rage Corner argument. I wanted to shout out to a revolutionary hero.
This sounds like a love corner now.
I do. I want to shout out to this revolutionary hero. Some of us sit around on Twitter and talk about how the world is kind of fucked up, how the world could probably be a better place if we did something about stuff. Sometimes guys act on it. Some of those guys are also probably the weirdest people on Twitter. And this comes from a man who I unfortunately do not know his actual name. I only know him by his Twitter handle at Piss Pig Granddad. But hold on, but this guy who I am pretty sure is no more than like his mid 20s. And this is a guy who like he's part of like the weird left of Twitter. He like does stuff like one of his famous things was like he like added Hillary Clinton as like show feet. What was the other thing he did here? I'm just kind of going back through here, but. The long and short story is that he went off to Syria and joined the Kurdish militia YPJ, and now he is in Mosul right now fighting ISIS. just out of the blue, some kid with hipster glasses. It, there, his last picture, his last tweet I see as of Monday night to misquote Celine, "When you're in," and it's him holding a rifle and a pup and a dog pup he found in Mosul with like a building tagged YPJ. And like, yeah, this guy's in it deep right now. But he's, we talked about Zach De La Rocha being in Argentina last week.
Oh yeah,
Ryan or wherever. But this guy's actually leading that life right now. So thank you to Piss Pig Granddad, whose screen name is Lennon Lover 69. You're a hero.
Wow, this took a so
how about Jim Caldwell and those two watches he wears?
Okay.
Even by this podcast standards, that was a strange segment.
Thank you, Piss Pig Granddad. Do we have a Wally's World this week, or are you good?
I think we're good. We don't need to talk about Wally this week, other than the fact that he likes to buy mozzarella sticks by the party size.
Yeah, Molly, what we're saying this right now, we are issuing a papal bull while, like, this is like in Parliament, in the UK Parliament, like when a member of an MP is, like, distracted or outside the chambers, they, like, rat fucking pass some, like, legislation. We're doing that right now. We're issuing this POD bull against mozzarella sticks.
Yeah, I mean, I could go a good 30-minute rage corner on mozzarella sticks, but I'm not going to.
What we should do is get into the mailbag.
Yes, we should. Mail time. Mail time.
Okay, mailbag time. Before we start, too, I know this is a kind of a remembrance thing. We talked about one guy dying and one guy joining the revolution. We got to say happy trails and bless his soul to two people. Mentioned him a little earlier, but Drew Sharp did pass away on Friday. Very young, 56. And I mean, yeah, that's sad, no matter what you feel about Drew Sharp. The other bit of news is Arian Foster has decided we're recording this Monday night. He has retired.
That's a bummer to me because
Drew Sharp dying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I just don't have much to say about Drew Sharp because I don't know him as a person.
Yeah, that's fair. But you know Arian Foster enough to talk about
him. Well, I followed Arian Foster on Twitter, so I feel like I have a better understanding of who he is as a person than I do of Drew Sharp. And Arian Foster was a guy that was very outspoken about important issues to him, and I respect that in the NFL because it's something you don't get that often. It's obviously, we're seeing a little bit more of it now with the Kaepernick stuff, but he was also a guy that I thought was very good and had a lot of potential, even this late in his career and with all the injury stuff. And when the Lions were about to bring him in this offseason, I got a little excited, maybe not for his playing potential, but just kind of having that personality around would make the locker room a little brighter, would make covering the team a little bit more fun. But unfortunately, no one's going to have that honor anymore.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. Let's see, what do we have here to start? We got some good questions all around.
When the Lions win, people seem to be in better moods and give us better questions. So
yeah, although a lot of them have been about the Lions, though. So
it's just nice not to get any. So when are we hiring Matt Patricia? I'm glad that's stage true.
That's over. Very true. Okay, let's start with a classic, Joseph R. Sweeney 5, who I learned on Facebook Live this week what the R in his name stands for. He's got a couple of questions for us. One, pumpkin beer, is it best imbibed or tossed in the gutter? Quick responses to this one, because he's got a couple more. Yes or no?
Thumb up.
Thumb down.
I enjoy the Blue Moon pumpkin spiced ale, so thumb up.
Okay. Favorite trick-or-treat candy of all time. Be careful here, Ryan.
I don't want to go first.
Snickers is the premier candy bar in any sort of situation.
I'm giving this 50-50 between my personal favorite is Three Musketeers, but I think Halloween candy, gotta be Reese's Cups.
I'm gonna go with the crispity, crunchity, peanut buttery, Butterfinger. I mean, the stats don't lie. Ugh. You know, in 2010, sales of 598 million, Butterfinger has become increasingly popular. Oh, and it's typically ranked as the 11th most popular candy bar sold. It sold $17.68 billion worth of candy between 2007 and 2010. I'm sorry. Butterfinger's the correct choice.
You are disgusting.
Y'all, listen. We have a lot of inside jokes that usually stay in within our Slack. But when you hear an answer like that, you know something went down in our Slack to make Ryan that defensive about his choice in the candy bar.
$598 million in 2010 alone. I'm just saying. Popular candy bar. Many people enjoy it.
Because they shell out washed up cartoon characters to shell out their crappy products.
Hold up. Are you saying The Simpsons are washed out?
Yep.
Family Guy used to moderate a Family Guy forum. Family Guy, you used to moderate a Family Guy.
The gloves are coming off.
Hey. That.
Come at me.
We all used to listen to Limp Bizkit. We all made mistakes.
What do you mean? Used to.
I would say Lions football was a mistake, but.
Hey.
All right, last one from him. Favorite horror movie of all time?
Horror's not my genre. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't really have an answer here.
I will give an answer, though. The Thing.
That's a really good answer.
John Carpenter? Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal answer. Mine, if I were to go, like, stereotypical slasher film, the original Halloween is really good. That movie still spooks me out no matter how many times I see it. But my favorite horror film is the original Evil Dead.
I also really like Alien, too.
I hate the video game.
Can I say Shining? Is The Shining horror?
Yeah.
I'll go horror. Shining.
The Shining's okay. Horror. Yeah.
That's actually Stanley Kubrick's confessional film that we never landed on the moon.
I still need to, what's the name of that documentary? I need to see that.
No, please
Room
don't.
Two something something. I forget. Check out that film.
I'll just watch the movie Room and that's the same thing, right?
Right.
All right, let's move on. Lion Owl asks, Cleveland is headed full speed ahead for 0-16. Do you think the Browns will join the Lions in this exclusive club?
No, Kevin Hogan will run for 250 yards one game and lead the Browns to a victory.
Look, they've been really close sometimes, too. Granted, the 08 Lions were also really close in a few games. Didn't they go to overtime with the Dolphins?
Not that many. I don't think so.
They went to overtime with the Dolphins, I thought.
Did they? I don't remember that. But
yes, they went to overtime with the Dolphins.
All right. Settle down.
I'm looking at their schedule. I'm looking at their schedule now. I mean, they still play a game against the Ravens that they could probably win.
I mean, they play the Jets next week. That's winnable at home. Me and my buddies actually went over this last night, and there are a couple of winnable games in that schedule. You know, we don't really know what the Bills are all about. The Steelers could be without Roethlisberger for a while.
Yeah, those are divisional games, though. When they play the Ravens and they play the Steelers, those games count for two. And those are two teams that I think will still be fighting for playoff berths. So
here's one they could win. Christmas Eve, home against the Chargers.
If Cleveland was 0-14 going into playing the Chargers, would there be anything more Chargers like than to lose that game?
No. The answer is no.
No, hell no. I don't know. Hope springs eternal. Look, they're in the World Series. They have a Larry Brown trophy too. They're good.
I was going to say, I mean,
Larry O'Brien. I accidentally said Larry Brown.
They should rename it the Larry Brown trophy after the 04 Pistons run. I completely agree with you, Chris. But Cleveland definitely deserves to have an 0-16 football franchise with the year that the rest of their sports have been having. So
yeah, fuck them. Seriously, they're thinking about talking about like City of Champions.
Cleveland.
There's only one champion in that city. He's just letting y'all touch it.
Yeah. I hope they get rolled by the Cubs 4-0.
I hope not, because it's going to take money out of my mouth. Give me at least six games.
That's where you put your money?
No, I work as a board op. I work as a radio board op. If they
Why do you put it in your mouth, though?
Hold on, you're willing to put money in your mouth, but you won't put a butterfinger in there?
Next question. Adam Sanders, 6661. Jace Gable Billingsley in, Andre Roberts out, ?
You can't. I want to, but you can't.
We love Jace, but it's not going to happen for him this year, I'm afraid.
Does Jace make that catch on the last drive? No, probably not.
He would have like six touchdown returns. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
He would be breaking some ankles too.
That's what he does.
Yep.
He'll get his chance. Don't worry. Next year.
Okay, we got a question here from Twitter from DWalk at No Pictures. What Overwatch characters best describe this team? Ryan, you are our expert. I know Alex Reno is an expert too, but he's not here, so.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm better at Overwatch than Alex is. That's not true at all whatsoever. Alex is probably better than
me. We're shiving him in his absence. We really are. Between us and the monster.
That's the podcast tradition, though.
Yeah.
When he's not here, we shiv the shit out of him.
Isn't that what you do when you have coworkers that call into work? Everybody just kind of slanders him on that shift. But no, really, Alex is good at Overwatch. He's probably better than I am, but. I think that if the Lions were any single Overwatch character, I'll give you one Overwatch character. And considering all the Lions are to me right now is just one giant amalgamation of a Matthew Stafford divine creature, I would say that, and this is such a basic Overwatch character, but the Lions would be Soldier 76, because look at Matthew Stafford, and I'm going to fill Chris and Jeremy in here. So each character has kind of like some special abilities. Soldier 76 is the only character that can sprint. So when I
wheels,
when I think of Matthew Stafford, I think of two carries for what, 34 yards last week?
Yeah, 32 yards last week? He went long too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got Matthew Wheel Stafford, then his Soldier 76's ultimate special is the tactical visor, which automatically aims your weapon at targets in view. Matthew Stafford, anything that's within his sight is just going to be right on the money.
Can you tell me who's like the most troll character on Overwatch? Because my view of the Lions at this point is that they're a troll team. They're here. No one expects too much of them, of the three opponents we just had. Like, the Eagles came in, they were really riding high. They were really slappy about it. And the Rams, okay, whatever, but they still kind of could have won it. And then the Skins came in, and they, again, there was a guy predicting 45-10. But the Lions just troll people, and they troll their own fans, too, by some of these games that they lose. So what is the most trollish Overwatch character?
It's probably Junkrat. Everybody uses Junkrat when they can't play. I use Junkrat a lot.
Okay. We got another video game question, but I'm going to take a serious question first. Underdog, first question. Do you think, this is about Matt Stafford, do you think he has finally, quote, taken the next step as we've been talking about and hoping for these years? If not, what needs to happen for you to say yes to that? I mean, we kind of did this earlier segment, but yeah, go on. Yeah,
I think he's trying to tease at the fact that some people need to see him win a playoff game to crown him as a leader, whatever you want to crown him as. But I don't need that, because I'm aware that playoff wins are not a quarterback stat. So I just need more time of him playing like this. If he can go the whole season playing like this, he's elite. I'll say it right now. Easily.
All right, and then the video game question: Fallout, Elder Scrolls, or Mass Effect?
Fallout. It's not even really close.
No. I'm an Elder Scrolls slappy. I've been playing since Daggerfall. I love the Elder Scrolls. I have a friend who used to work on one of the Elder Scrolls games. I will take that over everything.
Respectfully disagree. But let me say this about Matthew Stafford real quick.
Okay.
If Matthew Stafford wins a playoff game. He's the most important Detroit sports figure of how many past decade, 20 years?
You're going to make me try to denigrate Rasheed Wallace, and I don't want to do that. Oh, I love Sheed.
Hold on. I love Sheed more than the next guy, but he's not nearly as important as... I think the only other person that you could put up that would be comparable would be Steve Yzerman. And we're coming up...
What about Cabrera?
And we're coming up on... No.
I don't. Verlander?
No. Nope. I don't think so.
No love for Datsuk?
No. Yzerman finally brings a cup to the franchise after 42 years without one, of being, you know, one of the most, you know, storied franchises in hockey, you know, in the 50s. But, I mean, come on. I mean, we're coming up on what? 97 was when the Wings won their first cup. We're coming up on almost 20 years. Stafford wins a playoff game for the Lions. He's the most important Detroit sports figure of the past 20 years.
Stafford, I'm going to tie this back to Elder Scrolls. I'm going to go to Morrowind. Bobby Lane is Nerevar Indoril, and Matthew Stafford is his reincarnation as the Nerevarine. And he is going to slay Dagoth Ur, who is like, I don't know, the Super Bowl curse or something.
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
You never
played
Morrowind? Oh, man. That was my favorite, like, old school PC game.
Just to let everybody who knows this is not a visual medium, when I said that if Matthew Stafford wins a playoff game, he's the most important Detroit sports figure of the past 20 years, Jeremy was crawling in his skin because he did not know how to feel about it.
Well, I mean, you're... First of all, you're putting one playoff win at the level of a Detroit championship, which is a little crazy to me.
It is a little crazy, but how long have we been waiting for this?
It's true, but like, you know, the Pistons, well, not the Pistons are a bad example. The Tigers have gone a long time without a championship. Obviously not as long as the Red Wings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all of our lifetimes.
That's true. Really? That's true.
Even yours, Jeremy?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Shut up, Ryan. Why aren't we talking about Centipede right now instead of Elder Scrolls? Which Pac-Man ghost is Calvin Johnson?
Are you not going to answer that that RPG question, Jeremy?
No, I've never played any of those games.
Fuck. Which comic book, what is from GV42, what's the best comic book movie of all time in your opinion?
One of the Spider-Man films, for sure.
You guys control like this when I'm not here, but I'm here right now.
Okay. I think if I'm giving this a serious answer, Batman Returns.
I love that film.
My favorite one is whatever the last one ever made is. Because I'm so sick of them.
I'm trying to do this justice without my own revulsion and exhaustion from them. So, yeah. We think, Ryan, is it Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice?
Again, not a visual medium, but right now, he's Ryan is having face. Vietnam he's flashbacks.
We might have killed him.
My eyes got so wide. I just flashed back to the beginning of the podcast talking about Pete Carroll being a 9/11 truther.
The tower coming down, the Wayne Tower coming down in Metropolis.
It's there, I'm telling you.
Oh,
just
wow,
watch.
Stark.
Spider-Man 2 is the correct answer, though.
Brett Cassino from Twitter. Will the Lions retire Stafford's number someday? Will he hold every franchise record?
He's probably almost there in the second question, to be honest.
They're going to retire. He, I don't know if they retire his number, but he's going to be... Well, if he goes up on that Ring of Honor, does that mean his like number's retired? If he's up there with like Bobby Lane and Night Train and
probably
and all the rest.
I don't know.
He belongs up there eventually.
No, he's going to be up there. I'm just wondering, does that constitute a retired number or is it...
Nobody wears number 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that counts.
I'm having a hard time with this question. It's a really good question. And I think it really depends upon where the team goes, unfortunately. If this team makes it to a Super Bowl, it's an easy yes.
Oh, slam dunk yes.
I don't know if if he comes up short of that, I don't know.
I think
at the very least they could probably in his career make an NFC championship.
If Matthew Stafford wins a playoff game, he gets his number retired.
That's how low the bar is, huh?
You're probably right, because I mean, when you think about it, Barry Sanders obviously didn't have any team accolades except for one playoff win.
I don't want to joke. I'm not trying to joke about how low the bar is, but the Lions were just celebrating the 91 team because they made it to the NFC Championship game and got blown out. Yeah.
It's just Stafford isn't quite on the same level at his position that Barry Sanders was. I need to make that clear.
Well, yeah, but of course.
It's close. I don't know. I want to give an answer, but I don't know.
I'm not a huge proponent of retiring numbers, so.
Next question. Critical Perspective wants to ask, would it help or hurt the Detroit Lions if Matt Stafford also lined up for a few snaps at linebacker? I'm not sure I'm joking.
Yes, it would hurt them. And by them, I mean the other team.
I wanted to pitch this earlier in an earlier segment. I was thinking about this during the game. I don't know if I like defense anymore. Can I just propose this one thing? I know, who was it? Was it Jane Costin, who used to be at Every Day Should Be Saturday? She once proposed the all PI offense. I am now proposing the all offense defense. I think that, like, you know, the other team, they get the ball. Instead of sending the defense out there, you just send your offense out there. And they line up like they're going to take offensive snaps. They put their hand in the ball and everything. The other team will be so confused they won't know what to do. And it'll just be a turnover. But just like that. Just run the offense out there every snap. I don't care.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
I don't care. I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this defense again all year.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I mean, we've seen Stafford truck someone on offense. Let's see him truck a running back now. I'm for it.
So was your favorite game of the weekend, Chris? Was it Oklahoma versus Texas Tech?
Only because my Texas Tech friend was melting down. The fact that Patrick Mahomes had 740 yards passing and still lost.
And Baker Mayfield had 7 touchdown passes.
Yeah, he had less yards than Patrick Mahomes, though. But yeah, yeah.
Anybody who throws for 740 yards, that's insane.
he was stumping my friend Hunter Cook. Shout out to him. He used to be, I think he's still the managing editor of Viva the Matadors, but he might not be anymore. But he was trying to stump for me at the start of the year that Patrick Mahomes should be a Heisman candidate. And yeah, I mean, he's throwing for a lot of yards, but Tech ain't got a lot of wins. Let's see. GV42, if our defense can play 20th ranked ball the rest of the year, what would our record be?
10-6.
Yeah? You think so?
Considering how bad it is right now, if it goes up 12 ranks, I would have to assume that 1, DeAndre Levy is back, 2, Darius Slay is healthy, and 3, Ezekiel Ansah is back to being his normal healthy self as well. And that probably also includes Haloti Ngata. If the Lions get back to 20th, their entire defense is healthy. And I thought at the beginning of the year, if their entire defense was healthy, their defensive line is good enough to generate pressure like it did last week against Washington, I think everything else would kind of fall into place as long as Levy was, you know, the linebacker that we remember him being, and he showed at least some shades of that in the first week against Indianapolis. But yeah, I think that if they moved up to 20th, if they went up 12 spots, if their offense maintained being a top 7, top 6 offense, why not 10-6?
I think that's a good answer. I like 10-6.
Yeah, yeah. Blake Berry asks, how screwed is the defense if Slay has to sit? I think the defense is already screwed, to be honest.
Remember when you asked us about what our favorite horror film was? I think my new favorite horror film would be the 2016 Lions defense if there was no Darius Slay.
John Oliver has this running gag that we've hit rock bottom as a nation, and he says we keep hitting rock bottom every week, and like where we saw last week is actually way up there. And that's exactly what this defense would be. We think we have hit rock bottom with defense. If Darius Slay is gone, we wouldn't even recognize what we thought was rock bottom last week.
Right. I mean, rock bottom last week was missing Dwayne The Rock Washington. Hey-oh! I knew Jeremy wasn't going to like a wrestling joke. Damn it, I did
Red
it.
Ruckus. Red Ruckus. We need to, like, penalize people for that. Red Ruckus 81. Thoughts on bone-in versus boneless wings?
Don't get me started on that shit.
I think we're all team bone-in, right?
I know. I have some thoughts on this. I think... John Cena!
Brock Osweiler looks exactly like Robert Pattinson.
Who's that?
Okay.
The guy from Twilight? The vampire?
How do you know this stuff about Twilight?
How do you not know who Robert Pattinson is? He was the biggest, like, teenage heartthrob for, like...
Ryan, how old am
three
I?
3 years.
Did you just answer your own question?
How old am I, Ryan?
Eat my ass.